So just to review, the last thing that we discussed yesterday, on Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, was Rav Ashi. And that you'll see, if you see the Tosus on the side, Ella, it's a little bit below that. And again, we're trying to understand the Sefer, the Braisa, the case of Megara V'Yotze, Megara V'Yotze. And if you recall, according to the Sefer, in this case, the halacha is that he's potter from tashlumin on the wallet as a ganav, because Isur Shabbos and Isur Gneva boim ki echad. In other words, he's kona the wallet and he's chayef Gneva at the point at which he takes it out into Rishus HaRabim. And Rav Ashi explains that the way this operates is through something called Yado Shel Adam. Chaim, remind me to talk to you after we finish about which meal.
Wonderful, thank you.
Okay. So Rav Ashi Omar, Kigon Shetziref Yado Lemata Mishlosha. So in the Braisa, we're talking about a case where he's dragging the wallet out of the base bailim, out of the base hanignav, out into Rishus HaRabim. And until now we needed the Tzidei Rishus HaRabim to try to figure out exactly how he achieves a violation of the Isur Shabbos, and at the same time he's Kona B'Kinyan Gneva. So we came up with the case of Tzidei Rishus HaRabim. And we say that Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, according to Rabbi Eliezer, has the status of Rishus HaRabim, but that's only as far as Shabbos is concerned. So when he drags out the wallet into Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, he's Chayef Otso. As far as Kinyan is concerned, he could be Kona in Tzidei Rishus HaRabim because it's Lo Shchichi Be'Rabim. Rav Ashi wants to just completely cut that all out, circumvent that whole discussion. We don't have to talk about Tzidei Rishus HaRabim. We could say that he drags the wallet into Rishus HaRabim itself. Oh, so now the question is, we're holding that Meshicha is not Kona in Rishus HaRabim. That's going to be my focus in a minute. But we're going now according to that Shita. So the question is, how does he achieve his Kinyan? And the answer is, Kigon Shetziref Yado Lemata Mishlosha. What he does is, he puts his hand, open hand, near the ground, and then when he drags the wallet with one hand, he drops the wallet into his other hand, the Kiblo. And what we're saying now is that since he's Makabel, the wallet in Rishus HaRabim, in his hand, therefore he makes a kinyan on it. The kinyan gneva and Isur Shabbos come together. Ukidurava. The Gemara says that this reflects the principle of Rava. The Omar Rava Yado Shel Adam Chashuvalo Ke'arbal Arba. Now this statement of Rava is copied from a Gemara at the very beginning of Masechta Shabbos in the Sugya of Hotzah. Normally, in order to be chay from Melechus Hotzah, you need Hanocha al gabi mokom arba al arba, which means four tefachim by four tefachim. If it's very narrow, less than four tefachim square, that's not called a Hanocha, and you wouldn't be chayav. The reason for that is it's not a secure place. That's not considered anoch. It's going to fall. It's not being held on a serious surface. But Yado Shel Adam, says Rava, is considered, even though obviously it's not four tefachim by four tefachim, as a mokom anoch, he's going to be chayef from Meleches Hotzah when he puts it down in Yad. Now normally the case would be, and that's the Mishnah at the beginning of Shabbos, with the Oni and the Usher, where one person puts it into the hand of somebody else. Here, he's putting it to his own hand. But that's irrelevant to our discussion, because Rava's point is that the Yad has a certain special status, a certain chashivas to it. It's considered a makom, even though it's not dalet al dalet. And the explanation for that is because in the case of a yad, once your hand grabs onto something, it's in a secure position. He's not about to drop it. So now it comes out that on the one hand, he violates the Isur Shabbos the moment he crosses the threshold with this wallet and catches it in his other hand in Rishus HaRabim. That's considered anocha in Rishus HaRabim. On the other hand, at that very same moment, he achieves a kinyan gneva. Now, how does that kinyan gneva work? So Rashi here and elsewhere says it works through chatzer. In other words, we're holding now that there's no mashicha as a kinyan in Rishus HaRabim. So we have to find some alternative kinyan here in order to explain why at that moment when he passes it from one hand to the other, he's potter from gneva. Well, what was the chiv gneva to begin with? A chiv gneva is predicated on a kinyan gneva. Where is the kinyan gneva over here? And the answer, says Rashi, is chatzer. Now again, keep in mind that his hand, as we saw in Rav Ashi, is lamata mishlosh. It's below shlosh tfachim. And in that sense, he doesn't have agbar. All he has is a mashicha. And that's why it wasn't an operative, it wasn't effective in Rishus HaRabim, because we're holding now that mashicha is not kohen in Rishus HaRabim. Fine. But what kinyan could he achieve? And the answer is he could achieve a kinyan chatzer. And this kinyan chatzer is a substitute for kinyan agbar. It's as if he lifted it above three tefachim. Why? Because it's in his chatzer. Something that's in your chatzer is considered as if you lifted it up and you made a kinyan hagbah. Now, I wanted to point out to you in this context that Rashi and Tosfos have a certain disagreement. Rashi says that the reason why Rava is being quoted here as saying that Yerushalayim Chashuva Kadnocha B'Makom Dalet Al Dalet is to explain why the Yad is considered Chashuv as far as Kinyanim is concerned. In other words, as far as Hotzah is concerned, we have the Sheet of Rava, and that's in Masechta Shabbos. But the reason why the Gemara, according to Rashi, needs Rava here in this context is not for Hilchas Shabbos so much, but rather for Hilchas Kinyanim. We said that Hagbah works, but only if it's Lamala Mishlosha. The Chiddush of Yad is that Yad is considered as if he did Hagbah Lamala Mishlosha.
Well, I thought the Kinyan Gneva was from Rishut to Rishut.
Oh, so that applies. That applies to the case of Mashicha. The only problem is that you have a choice here. You have a choice between Hagbah and Mashicha. So Hagbah would work even if he was Magbiah in Rishus Bailey.
Right.
Now, if he doesn't have Hagbah, he needs a Mashicha. But we're holding now that Mashicha requires that he take it into his own personal Rishus. Later we're going to see two opinions about that, about Mashicha into Rishus HaRabim. This sugya of Rav Ashi reflects the Shita of Acha, which we're about to learn, that Mashicha Rishus HaRabim is not a kinyan.
Okay.
And he's deriving that from the Mishnah in Bava Kamma. So now Rashi says that if Mashicha is not going to operate in Rishus HaRabim, then we have to find another kinyan. And Rashi says that that kinyan is going to be Hagbah. Now, what do you mean Hagbah? He took it from one hand and he put it into his other hand, but he's below three tefachim. Hagbah, by definition, requires Lamala mi three tefachim. That's the Chiddush of Rava. The Chiddush of Rava is that the Cheshivas of a Makom Dalet Al Dalet, in the case of a Yad, allows us to make the following equation, that Yodah Shel Adam is like Hagbah Lamala Mishlosha. And Tosfos doesn't understand what Rashi's talking about. Again, the Cheshivas of Dalet Al Dalet is Halach in Hanoch in Shabbos, that you put it on a secure place. What relationship does that have to Hilchas Kinyanim? And he says the following, Tosfos, that if you want to know why the kinyan operates, I don't need any proof. I don't need to quote Rava. I can invoke a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk in Get, in Parshas Ki Teisa, it says, "V'nosan v'yoda get krisus," that she makes a kinyan on a get the minute that the Baal delivers the get into her hand. So therefore, Tosfos assumes that the quote here of Rava is purely le'inyan Chiv Shabbos. As far as the Kinyan Yad is concerned for Gneva, we have a Pasuk in Chumash, V'nosam B'yadah. Rashi on the other hand thinks that we need Rav also in Hilchas Kinyan. Now I have here in front of me a Sefer that's called Mishkanos HaRoim. I just want to read to you a few lines from this Sefer. He says, K'var nechleku bazeh Rashi v'tosus b'tchilas ha-sugya. The Gemara at the beginning of the sugya asks the following question. If a person steals his friend's chalev and he eats it, he's chayev to pay his friend for the chalev. Why? Because the very moment he lifted the chalev, he was koneh it. And the Gemara asks the following question. Well, why don't we say hagbol l'tzorach achila? And we link up the hagbol with the achila, and the achila generates a chiyuv kares, and that should knock off the chiyuv tashlumei gneva. So the Gemara answers, we don't say hagbol l'tzorach achila because iboy gachim v'achil. He could have bent down, and he could have eaten the chalev off the ground. He didn't need the hagbol. So Rashi explains that yochel likchon, he could bend down, v'lechol lamata migimel, when the chalev is below three tfachim, and therefore lo havi hagbah, he completely circumvents the hagbah. So the only reason he's kone is because he eats it, and at that moment he also incurs a chiyuv chalev. And therefore, the Gemara wants to assume that in such a case he should be potter. In the case of Rav Chisda, where he lifts it up and then he eats it, well, he didn't have to lift it up, and therefore the Agba is not called litzorech. Hence, there's no dinikim leiv the rabbinim. But in the case of gachin, where he bends his body and he eats it from the ground, Rashi says, there's no Agbah here. Why is there no Agbah? Because it's Lamata mi Gimel Tfachim. Agbah is only when you lift it up above Gimel Tfachim. So Tosus raises the following objection. What shaykhus is there for Agbah on something that he's holding onto in his hand or he has in his mouth? Once he has it in his mouth, Tosus says he can apply the Pasuk of Inasan Biyadu. And the Gemara says that in Gittin, if a man puts a get into a woman's pocketbook, then she's Megureshes. And the reason for that is that the pocketbook itself is now like a chotzer, and he's putting it into a chotzer. But Tosus here is very consistent. Tosus is saying that you don't need Lamala Megimel in a case of a chotzer, because the Torah says, V'nosan B'yodah, and it's irrelevant where her yad is, whether it's above three tefachim or below three tefachim. And Tosus equates piv, the mouth, in the case of gachim, with yad, with chotzer. It means once it's in his mouth, it's in his chotzer. So even though it's below three tefachim, he made a kinyan here. Rashi, on the other hand, says that there cannot be a kinyan agbar here because he is below three tefachim. Tosus holds it's irrelevant because once you have the svar of yad or chotzer, then even if it's below three tefachim, you're kona. So that's exactly what we have here in our sugya as well. Rashi is going to interpret that the reason why the Gemara quotes Rava here of Yadu Shalom Kedalin Al Dalin is because we want to establish some sort of a kinyan because it's below three tefachim. And that's where we need Rava, that somehow the Chashivas of a Yad serves as a Kenyan. And he's Chayef for Gneva, and hence the Brisa says we're going to apply Kimlev the Rabbinim because at that moment, when he catches it in his hand, he violates the Yisro Tzah, because the hand is a Hanukha. Tosus, on the other hand, says, I don't need Rava to establish that there's a Kenyan in the Yad. The Kenyan in the Yad is well documented by the Torah itself that says, V'nosam B'yadah. Rashi's claim that it's below three tefachim. Okay, Rashi's operating with Hagbah, and he thinks that we have a problem here because the yad is below three tefachim, as Rav Ashi said, and there's no Hagbah. So therefore, Rashi has to come up with a brand new kinyan here, which is called the kinyan yad, that's derived from Rava, whereas Rava is making his comment in the context of Hotzah. Rashi is applying it to Hilchus Kinyan, and Tos says, I don't need that whole business. All I need to say is that the yad is a kinyan. I don't need rubber for that because a yad is a kinyan by virtue of an osam the yadah. And Tosus quotes a Mishnah in Masechta Gittin that if you put it in her kolsa, in her tick, and the tick is below three tefachim, nevertheless it's considered like a yad. A yad equals a chatz. A chatz equals a yad. So this is basically the Gemara that we did yesterday, and now we're starting a new Gemara now. The Gemara wants to know whether or not we need the answer of Rav Ashi. And again, the answer of Rav Ashi is predicated on the assumption that Mashicha cannot be coded versus a Rami. So Rav Acha Masni Hachi. Rav Acha agrees to this principle, adopts this principle, that there's no Mashicha as a Kenyan in Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, the only way of setting up this Kenyan Kneva here, in the case of Megara V'Yotze, where he's taking it out into Rosh Hashanah, is if we operate with Rav Ashi. Namely, that there's a Tzir of Yodah Mitachas L'Shosha Tvachim. He accepts, he receives the kiss in his yad, and Yodah Shalom Kedalan Adalan, as Rashi says, these are as far as Kinyonim are concerned. Ravina Masli we all of the Afkirusha Sarabi. Ravina says, I don't need to introduce yad and this kind of complicated Hechitimsa, the scenario where he drops it from one end to the other. No, let him just drag it out of the base pylon and bring it out to the Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because Ravina disagrees with Rav Acha, and for that matter Rav Ashi, and he holds that Rosh Hashanah nami kona, that you could be kona mishicha into Rosh Hashanah. He's memela, the moment he crosses the threshold into Rosh Hashanah, he has both a Kinyan Mashicha and a Chiyuv Hotzah because he took it from Rosh Hashayach to Rosh Hasharabim. So everything happens b'vasachas according to Ravina. Simple case of Grera. And Grera means Mashicha. So he's Kona as a Ganav and he's also Chayav because of his Hanoch of Rosh Hasharabim. V'travayu, and this machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina about whether Mashiach works in Rosh Hasharabim is dependent upon b'diyuka. B'diyuka means how to analyze and read carefully the Hamas Nisan, a certain Mishnah. Kamithli, that's what the controversy is all about. What Mishnah do we have in mind? This is a Mishnah in Masechta Bava Kama, because you know that that last major chunk of Masechta Bava Kama is all about Gneva and Gzela. And the Mishnah is going to address the following question: can a Ganav be Kone with Mashicha? Tisnan, let's read the Mishnah. Hoya Moshcha, the Ganav is taking this shor. He's got an ox and he's leading the ox. And he's taking it out of the Mishnah's Bailun for the purpose of Gneva. So he's an ox thief. And what happened was that as he was doing Mashicha in the Rishus of the Bailim, Umes, the Shor, died. Now, if the Shor died, then the Mishnah establishes that this is a case of Onis and the Ganav is Potter.
Wait a minute. It says Moshcho V'yotze, but he hasn't actually left yet. It means
right.
He's going that direction.
Right.
Okay.
He's on his way out.
Okay. Thank you.
And he does Mashiach in Rosh Hashanah. Now, we've established, if you recall, that a Ganav is Kone in Rosh Hashanah in with Hagbah. Here, he didn't do a Hagbah. You know, the Shor was 500 pounds solid. He couldn't lift up the Shor. So instead, he drags the Shor. He leads the Shor. That's called Mashiach. However, Mashiach is not Kona versus Bailun. Again, we're going to have a machlokas, what happens in Mashiach in Rosh Hasharav, but in Rosh Hasharav, there's no such thing as a Kinyan Mashiach. Therefore, the Ganav did not make a Kinyan, and therefore he's not Chayv and Onsim. Normally, a Ganav is Chayv and Onsim, but that's by virtue of the Kinyan that he made on. Here, he was Moshech, he never got out into the Rosh Hasharav, and therefore, he was never Kona the animal. Because again, Mashiach of Rosh Hasharav is not Kona. And the animal died while it was in Rosh Hashanah. Higbio. So one case in which the Ganav would be Chayfa Onsim if the animal died would be if he made a Kinyan Agbah. And as we discussed many times, Hagbah is effective even in Rishus Bailam. Oh, another option, another scenario in which the Ganav would be chayev even though the animal dropped dead, and that's Ones, meaning the Ganav made a Kinyan, Hotzio Mirshus Bailam. If he dragged the ox out of Rishus Bailam, which means Luchora, that he dragged it into a Rishus Haravim, Umeis, the Shard died chayev, which seems to indicate that Meshicha to Rishus Haravim is a Kinyan. So there are two scenarios in which this Ganav would be Kona, the ox, the stolen ox, either through Agbah. Now again, how do you lift up a shor? So that's a sugya also in Bav Metzia, where what you do is you get the shor to step up onto different little platforms or stools. The Gemara even has a case where you could be kona an elephant with Agbah. Now, I don't know when the last time you saw anyone lift up an elephant, but the answer is that you cause the elephant to step up onto a high platform which is above three tefachim. That's called a kinyan Agbah. So that's one way of understanding why the Ganav made, how the Ganav made a kinyan, and therefore he's chayav for onsen. The other option is, let's go back to the assumption that he's doing a meshicha. He's not causing the animal to get up on a high place, but rather he's leading the animal. As soon as he crosses the threshold between Rishus Bailam and Rishus Haravim, he made a kinyan. And this is going to support the sheet of Ravina. If you remember, it was Ravina who disagreed with Rav Acha, and he was of the opinion that there is a kinyan meshicha in Rishus Haravim. So that's what the Gemara says now. Ravina diek miresha. Ravina, as the Gemara is going to explain, had a meticulous reading of the Resha, and based on his reading of the Resha, he came to the conclusion that the Mishnah maintains that there is Meshicha and Rishus Haravim. Rav Acha, who disagrees, he held that there is no Meshicha and Rishus Haravim, diek mi seifa. The Gemara explains. Ravina diek mi Resha. The Resha says, Hayamoshko v'yotzei umes b'shus b'ilin potter. Taima, the Mishnah is telling you why he's potter, the meis b'shus b'ilin, because the ox died before he crossed the threshold into Rishus Haravim, implying ha'otzio b'shus b'ilin umes chayav, that in any event, if he was able, before the animal died, to drag it over the threshold, and presumably into another Rishus, even if it's a Rishus Haravim, he would be chayav. He made a kinyan meshicha in Rishus Haravim. So that's the way Ravina understood the Resha. The Resha is telling you that the reason why he wasn't kona, and he's potter for the onsim, is because it died in Rishus Haravim. He never got a chance to do the meshicha out to the Rishus Haravim. Had he done so, he would have been kona, he'd be chayav for the misa of the animal. Rav Acha, diek mi seifa. What does it say in the seifa? It says, higbiho o hotsha hotzio. And this is a methodological principle that we're about to apply here, that's a universal principle, that whenever you see in a Mishnah, and even a Braisa, but especially in a Mishnah, it says X, O, Y, either X or Y, then there's always going to be an implicit equation between X and Y. It's almost like we have a hekesh in the Torah. There's a hekesh in the Mishnah when you have the word O. Whenever you see the word O connecting X with Y, you have a hekesh between the two. So Rav Acha can now apply that methodological principle here in the Sefer. The Sefer gives us two cases in which the Ganav would be Kona, and therefore he's chayav for the Mises HaShor. Number one is Higbiho. It means that in Rishus HaBailim, before the animal died, he got the animal to sit up on a bench, whatever it was, and he lifted up the animal. Oh, Shehotzio, or he took it out of Rishus HaBailim. So Rav Acha now sets up this equation, and he says the following: Hotzah dumya dahagbah. There's a similarity and analogy between these two alternative methods in which the ganav, by which the ganav was kona the animal. And he says the following: Mahagbadi asilur shusei. Just like in the case of Hagbah, he lifted up the animal, and that's considered as if he took the animal into his own personal rishus, because when you lift something up three tefachim, it's like you take it into your airspace, so to speak. Is afo tzad nami di asilur shusei. So too in the case of otzah, it doesn't mean that he just simply dragged the animal over the threshold of Rishus Bailim into Rishus Aram, but rather he took it into his own personal Rishus. And what that means is that he took it into his own chotzer. Remember, yesterday we had a case where we have two neighbors that have a chotzer that borders, one chotzer borders on the other. So that's what the Ganav did. He took it out of the chotzer of the Nignav and he dragged it into the chotzer of his own personal chotzer, and that's considered osilur shusei. So the Gemara now asks, well, let's go through this Mishnah again, Reish and Seifa, and switch it around. Let's see how Ravina is going to interpret the Seifa and how Rav Acha is going to interpret the Reisha. The Rav Acha kasha Reisha, because again the Diuk was in support of Ravina from the Reisha, and L'Ravina Kasha Seifa, there was a deacon in the Seifa in support of Rav Acha against Ravina. So Gemara says the following: Reisha L'Rav Acha Lo Kasha. Rav Acha is going to explain the Reisha in a way that it doesn't contradict his thesis, his principle. And what he means is the following: that Kama Delo Asi L'Shusei Rishus Bailim Karinanle, that when the Mishnah says in the Reisha that the animal died in the Rishus Bailim, what it meant was that the animal did not yet enter the opposite of Rishus Bailim. And the opposite of Rishus Bailim is going to be the Rishus of the Ganav. So therefore, Rav Acha understood in this Mishnah that it doesn't mean that as long as he takes it out of Rishus Bailim, he automatically has a kinyan, even if he took it into Rishus Rab. No, if he took it into Rishus Rab, Mashiach of Rishus Rab is not kovet. But what it means is that he took it into the place of Rishus, which is the opposite of Rishus Bailim. And that means his own personal Rishus, so that Mashiach only works if you take it into your own Rishus. Seifa, L'Ravina Lokash. Ravina could deal with the Seifa. He doesn't accept this principle that there's like a hekesh, an analogy between the two cases. When the Mishnah says oh, it means a radically different case. You can have hagbah when you're koneh the Rishus Bailim, and you can have hotzah when you took it out of the Rishus Bailim into Rishus Arabim. And therefore Avina maintains that a kinyan mashiach in Rishus Arabim is meaningful, is valid. So don't say that, as Rav Acha would have it, that it's got to be Otzah Dumi Dagbah, and just like Hagbah means he took it into his own Rishus, so too Otzah means he took it out into his own Rishus, like he has a neighbor, he's a neighbor and he has his own chotzer next to him. No. What it means is that Hagbah Luchud and Otzah Luchud, each one is a different case. Otzah is a case where he took it into Rishus Aram. Hagbah means he took it into his own Rishus. So with this, Rav Osei, we make a siyum on a very long sugya that we've been dealing with for a long time now, and that's the sugya of Rav Nachunya ben Akana, the Braisa Rabibi, the Reisha, the Seifa, the concept of Akiru Litzorech Hanocha. All those concepts now we can put for Chazara, you know, we'll have to review them. Now we're picking up another dimension of Kimle B'Dramaminei, which has nothing to do with Rav Nachunya ben Akana. It has nothing to do with whether Kareis knocks off a Tashlum and Momon. This has to do with the status of Malkus. And the Gemara on Daf Lamed Beis, we're not going to get up to that today, but the Gemara is going to derive from a Pasuk Kedei Rishoso that you can't force a person to pay if he's Chayiv Malkus. That just like we have a principle of Kimlev Nirabini in the case of Misa, like Misa knocks off a Chiyuv Mamon, and maybe even Karis knocks off a Chiyuv Mamon, that's from the Nachunya ben Akana. So too we have Allah that Malkus knocks off a Chiyuv Mamon. Now that's going to be a real problem for our Mishnah, because our Mishnah has a whole long list of psuos, where he violates a lav d'oraisa, and he gets malchus, and yet the Mishnah establishes that he pays knas. We have a principle of eino loka mishalim. So let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Habal achos v'yal achos aviv." We'll read a couple of cases in the Mishnah. Achos imo, achos ishto, al eishes achiv, eishes achi achiv, al anido. In all these cases, the Mishnah says, "Yesh lem knas," and it means that even though there is a chiyuv kares, nevertheless, they pay knas. Again, this was a problem for Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, because he holds if there's a chiyuv karis, you don't pay knas. But our Mishnah reflects the sheet of the Chachamim of Nechunya ben Akana, which means that karis does not knock off a knas. Only Mises Bezdin would knock off a knas. And in these cases, there is no Mises Bezdin. The next Mishnah is going to be Baal Bito. That's going to be the Mishnah of Mischai Benafsho, of a Chiyuv Misa. Here there's no Chiyuv Misa, it's only Chiyuv Karis.
Excuse me, when we knock off Knas because of some other punishment, we also knock off Nizikin, that might be, right?
Correct. Okay. And that's going to be the premise of this sugi that we're about to learn. Uraminu.
Why do you have to make the distinction? Knas to be separate and distinct. I can be the Chiyuv for Mamo and, or not Mamo, and I'm still being Chiyuv for Knas, because Knas
maybe
is a separate entity.
I mean, but as far as I know, Asher the Gemara doesn't raise that possibility. Maybe we'll see it in one of the Rishonim. Uraminu, we have a Mishnah in Malkis, a Masech de Malkis. Elu hein halokin. We have a whole list of arayos of Isurei Bia, which generate Malkis. Again, all conditional on the fact that he got Asra. He was warned by the two witnesses. Abal achoso, al achos aviv, al achos imo, al achos ishta, aishas achiv, al aishas achi aviv. And these are exactly the cases that are mentioned in our Mishnah. The
or anida.
Al anida. So basically, the Mishnah in Makkos is a mirror image of our Mishnah, the seif of our Mishnah, and has a whole long list of chiyuvei kares. And the chiddush of the Mishnah in Makkos is that if there was Asra for Malkus, he gets Malkus. Well, that's a problem because of our Mishnah. You know, the Gemara is not asking Akasha on the Mishnah in Malkus. The Gemara is asking Akasha on our Mishnah. And here we're going to turn to Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. The Kaimalon di Eino Loka Mishalim. We have a rule, which again the Gemara is going to derive here on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis from the Pasuk Kedei Rishon, so that you don't get both Malkus and Tashlumei Mamon. So if in all these cases he's going to get Malkus, and that's explicit in the Mishnah in the Masechta Malkus, then how could the Mishnah establish that he pays Knas? There's no din of Knas in a case where he gets Malkus.
Is that Lekulei Alma?
As far as I know, that's Lekulei Alma. I mean, that's what Osher was asking me before. I don't know that anyone disagrees. Again, okay. I'm pleading the fifth here. If you know something that I don't know, then please tell me. But right now I'm assuming, and the Gemara is certainly assuming, that Malkus knocks off Knas. We cannot give both Malkus, administer Malkus, and at the same time force him to pay a Knas. And therefore our Mishnah becomes very, very difficult. How can our Mishnah say that at the same time that he violates an Isur Karis for which he gets Malkus, he has to pay the Knas? Now, there's a discussion here in Tosfos. Why did the Gemara wait until it got to the Sefer to ask this kasha? For example, in the Reish of the Mishnah, it says Abal Mamzeres pays Knas. Now Mamzeres is also a Chiyuv Malkus. So if the Gemara's whole point is Ein Aloka Mishalim, then the Gemara should have objected even in the Reish. The Tosfos ends up with a technical answer as to why the Gemara waited until the Sefer. Omar Ula Lo kasha. Kan be'achoso naro, v'kan be'ba'al achoso bogeris. I may have added a few words here to the Gemara just to clarify. It's all dependent upon whether there's a chiyuv knas. In our Mishnah, we're talking about a naro. And in the case of a naro, he's chayev knas. Okay, we're going to get back to this in just a second, if you hang on for a second.
Right, okay.
This is the unique sheet of Ula.
Mm-hmm.
Ula, Ula, Ula. That's the name of this game. Okay? In the Mishnah in Makis, which says that he gets Malkis, that's a case where there is no Knas. Why? Because it's Baal Achoso Bogeres. And the Torah says in both the case of Ones, there it's explicit in the Torah, and even in the case of Mefuta, where it's not explicit, that the Chiv Knas only applies to a Nara, again, possibly a Ketana, but certainly not a Bogeres. Once she's a Bogeres, she's 12 and a half, there's no Knas. Therefore, the Mishnah is justified in Masech de Makis telling me that you get Malkis, because there is no Knas. So now I mentioned Ula, Ula, Ula. This is the unique sheet of Ula. Ula holds that in the case where you should be chayv both Malkis and Mamon, you pay the Mamon and you don't get Malkis. That's going to be a major issue going through Masechta Perikei Lunairis. But let's understand the unique shita of Ula. Ula is of the opinion that if you pay, then you don't get Malkus. If you don't pay, you get Malkus. If we can institute a Chiyuv Knas, and again we can discuss Chaim, also the case of Pagam and Sar and Boshes and all the other then once we impose a Tashlumin on a person, we say that you have to write a check and pay up, at that point he becomes completely free of Malkus. So when Ula understands Eino Loka Mishalim, which is based on Kedei Rishasa, which we're going to learn later on in Daf Lamed Beis Amid Beis, he understands that the Torah, when the Torah says he can't give him both Malkus and make him pay, the Torah means make him pay, and hence he's exonerated from Malkus. That's Ula's unique approach. Another approach would be to say that he gets Malkus and he doesn't pay. But let's just understand Ula. Based on Ula's Shita, our Mishnah is going to tell us that since we're dealing with a Nara, therefore there's no Malkus. Why is there no Malkus? Because once she's a Nara, there's a Knas. And once there's a Knas, we say, Eino Loka Mishalim, which means you pay and you don't get Malkus. The Mishnah in Makis, which establishes in the very same case that you do get Malkus, is obvious according to Ula, obviously addressing a case where there is no Knas. Why is there no Knas in the Mishnah Malkus? The answer is because she's a Bogeres, and if she's a Bogeres, there's no Knas. If there's no Knas, Mimela, you get Malkus.
Why can't we hold the Shita both ways? Why can't they go both ways? Why can't we say it doesn't matter? Either you get Malkus and you don't pay, or you pay and you don't get Malkus. Why does by saying Eimaloka Mushali, why can't that just be a general statement? It can be either way. In other words, it's Eino Loka Mishalei, so right. You don't do both. Right. So therefore, I'm trying to understand what Svara is saying, that why can't I just say Eino Loka Mishalei means either I get Malkus and I don't pay, or I pay and don't get Malkus. Why can't I have such a shita?
It's like it's his choice. It's his choice. Decides.
It's Eino Loka Mishalei. You don't get both. There's nowhere in that expression does it say that it must be one way or the other.
That's going to be the sugya of Ula. But again, keep in mind, we're trying to understand our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says he has to pay the Knas. You know, it's not a matter of option. The Mishnah says he has to pay the Knas. Says Ula, he's paying the Knas, he doesn't get Malkus. That's the din of Eino Loka Mishalei. Yeah. Our Mishnah says in the very same case he does get Malkus. The answer is because he's not paying Knas. So everything depends upon whether there's a Chiyuv Mamon. If there's a Chiyuv Mamon, there's no Malkus. If there's no Chiyuv Mamon, then he gets Malkus.
Right, there's also an issue of how old the girl is, too.
Say again, an Nilton issue.
There's also how old the girl is.
Well, that's what determines the Knas.
So whether this Knas depends upon whether she's a Nara or she's past the age of Nara, she's a Bogeres.
Right.
And if there's no Knas, because she's Bogeres, then the Mela, she gets Malkus. So the Mishnah in Mark is talking about a case of Bogeres. Hence she gets Malkus, there's no Knas.
Right.
Our Mishnah is talking about a Nara where there is Knas. And if there's Knas, then there's no Malkus.
So they're two completely different cases.
And that's how Ula justifies and reconciles our Mishnah with the Mishnah in Malkus. Mm. The Gemara is not happy with this.
Mm.
Why? Even if I grant you, Ula, that the case in the Mishnah in Malkus is Achoso Bogeres, that doesn't mean that he doesn't pay anything. Again, he doesn't pay Knas, because in the Parsha Knas, the Torah says what? Narum. But nevertheless, there are other payments that have to be forked over, even if you don't pay knas. So the 50 shekels of knas is relieved because of bogeris. But ha'ika boshes upagam. Now boshes upagam has to do with something called chovel b'chaveiro. Chovel b'chaveiro means that if Reuven assaults Shimon, and as a result Shimon is humiliated, or Shimon's worth, his value on the market as a slave has been decreased, so you pay for that. And that's called Nezek and Pgam, and there's Boshes and Pgam. Then we're going to have a case of Tsar also. How much would it be worth for you to save yourself this Tsar? So that if we apply Ula's principle, that in the case with his Mammon and Malkus, then you pay the Mammon and you don't get Malkus, how could the Mishnah in Masechta Malkus, even if I grant you it's addressing the case of Bulgaris, how could it say that you get Malkus? There is no Malkus. Why? Because Ula says if you're paying, you don't get Malkus. And here he's going to pay. What is he going to pay? He's going to pay for Boshes. This is very humiliating to her. Again, we're going to soon see that there's a difference between Onus and Mafat in this context. But let's assume, let's talk about Onus. So in the case of Onus, he's going to have to pay Boshes for humiliating her and Pagam because... Let's assume her value goes down on the ksuba market for the time being. So the Gemara now has to further whittle down the case in Makis. Not only are we talking about a bogeres, which knocks off the chiyuv knas, but we're also talking about a shota. And in the case of shota, there's no boshes upagam.
Now, oh, the woman is the shota.
Yeah. Again, it's a little bit funny for me because, you know, you read a mission in Makis. First of all, the mission doesn't qualify that we're talking about a Bulgarian. Yeah. Secondly, the last thing in my mind when I read the mission was to talk about a shota. But Ula cannot justify a Chiyuv Malkus, which the mission is explicit about, if there's any Tashlum Mamon. So we have to completely empty out a Tashlum Mamon. You know, if it was a scoreboard for a hockey game, you know, we got to get it down to zero. Zero means no payment whatsoever. How do we get it down to zero? So with Bulgaris, we're going to knock off knots, but we still stuck with Boshes Supergam. So how do we get it down to zero? There's no payment at all? Shota. Now, why in the case of a Shota is there no Boshes?
Shota is a status where the girl is.
Yeah, that's a complicated question. What exactly is a shota?
Just for the practical thing, but if there's an answer, a quick answer, a short answer for it, but if not, whatever.
Right, the short answer for a shota is someone who, in a societal sense, in terms of social skills, is completely mufka. You know, they have no concept of anything that has to do with the way society operates, which means that a person, when he goes to sleep, he sleeps in a house. He doesn't sleep in a cemetery, okay? When a person has property, they don't destroy that property. Property is not meant to be destroyed. So they're forcing money shtus.
Okay.
And there's going to be great sugyas in Masechta Gittin about divorcing a woman who has these strange behavior patterns, whether she is a shota or she's not a shota. Does she have to have all four simon shtus, or if it's enough, she has one simon shtus? There are four simonim that make you into a shota. But the point that we have to take for our sugya is, and this is a sugya in Masechta Bava Kama, and that is that there's no boshes in the case of a shota. And the Ritva has major problems here because he thinks that the payment here is not for the isha's boshes, but for the father's boshes. It's an absolute humiliation for him that his daughter was violated. And the payments go to him. And therefore, the Ritva says, Ein lecha boshes gadol mizeh. In the case of a daughter, never she's a shota, and she was violated in this way. So we have to know exactly why there's no boshes over here. But that's the Ritva's issue, which I'm not getting into right now. Just mentioning it so you should know about it. And then on the level of Pagam means that your value on the market, on the slave market, has decreased. Well, a shota is not on the slave market. She's not worth anything on the market. Nobody wants to buy a shota. You can't get a penny for a shota. Because a shota is a woman
With no responsibility. So.
Yeah, there's no responsibility. You can't expect her to serve you. I mean, instead of serving you, she'll take your objects and she'll throw it into the garbage.
Yeah.
I mean, in my building where I live, there's a young girl who, again, I think this is an extreme case of Asperger's. You know, Asperger's can be 50 million different things, but in this case, I mean, this girl, and it's amazing how the parents take care of her. It's really amazing because she's out to lunch. I mean, not only you can't communicate with her at all, but not only that, she moves things and breaks things and jumps things and yells and screams. I mean, it's really out of control. And it's Rachmanis, you know, but the parents are doing a great job. Uh-huh. In fact, after raising this girl, I just want to show you, you know, Mikal for Yisrael, and having all that experience, they adopted a Down syndrome child.
Oh my word.
And you would say, this is crazy, like, you were a glutton for punishment, but they felt that they were in a unique position to deal with raising a Downs child, because they had to raise a child who's much worse than a Downs child.
Yeah.
In any event, there's no pagam over here, so there's no boshes of pagam. The Gemara is still not happy. We still need to whittle down this mission in Makkos in order to justify the Chiyuv of Malkus. For ikotzaro, when a person rapes a woman and she suffers tsar, that physical tsar is also payable, is also, you know, part of compensation. Memela, even in a case of A bogeris, and B, she's a shota, you wiped off the Chiyuv knas, you reduce to zero the Chiyuv of boshes and pagam, but there's still a Chiyuv mamon for tsar, because the fact that she's a shota doesn't mean that she doesn't suffer tsar. She suffers tsar. And here the Gemara comes up with a breakthrough. B'mefuta. Mefuta, a woman who consents to have this relationship, ein lo tsar. Okay, now that's a principle which the Gemara operates with. And that's why whenever we discuss mefuta and how much you pay for a mefuta, you'll never see a discussion about tsar. You'll always see discussions about knas, about boshes, about pagam, but not about tsar. We have to accept it right now on blind faith as gzeiras hakosu that lemefuta ein lo tsar. And this is going to be a sugi at the very end of Elu Naris on Daf Lamed Tes Lamed Beis. Rashi quotes it here that lemefuta ein lo tsar. So again, Rabbosai, we have a triple ukimta here, A, B, and C. The mission in Makkos, which implements Malkus, is going to have to be A case of Bogeres, hence there's no Knas, B, she's a Shota, hence there's no Boshin Subagam, and C, it's a Mefuta case, hence there's no Tsar. Okay.
No one's asked why. What do you mean that there's Malkot only if she's a Bogeret?
Because otherwise there's going to be Knas, and Ula's principle is that whenever you pay Knas, you're alleviated from Malkus. How can the Mishnah say get Malkus?
Oh, the Knas overrides the Malkot?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got that wrong.
Right. That's the basic principle of Asugi of Ula. I said, Ula, Ula, Ula.
Yeah,
gotcha. Any question you ask me, the answer is going to be Ula.
Okay.
All right, this is Ula's unique shita, that when the Torah says you can't get two punishments, in the case of Malkus and Mammon, it means you pay the Mammon and you don't get Malkus. So we're going to have to learn that Sugi of Ula and how Ula derives his conclusion later on. So therefore, if the Mishnah says you get Malkus, there must be zero Tashlumin. Because if there's any tashlumen, it knocks off the Chiyuv Malkus. How can the Mishnah say you get Malkus? And the answer is, there's no Knas because we're talking about a Bogeres. There's no Boshes of God, we're talking about a Shota. And there's no Tsar because we're talking about a Mefuta. So let's just read one more line in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Hashta diosis lohachi. Once you've already interpreted the Mishnah in Makkos as a case of Mefuta in order to neutralize the Chiyuv Tsar, then you don't need Bogeres and Shota. Why? Afilu tema achoso nara. Even if I'll tell you that the Mishnah is addressing a case of a nara, and not only that, she's a nara and she's perfectly lucid, she's not a Shota. Nevertheless, there's no mamon. It's a zero mamon. How? Be a soma, because her father is gone. She is an orphan from her father. Umefuta, we just said we're talking about a mefuta. And in a case of a yesoma mefuta, there is no knas, There is no boshes, there is no pgam, and there is no tzar. There's zero payment. Why? Because the father is out of the picture. He's gone.
In other words, the boshet is only the father's.
No. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the father. What I'm saying is the following: that there's something called mechila. This is the key concept here. In my Iyun Shir, which I give at 11:45, we spent days on this issue. It's a Yushalmi, it's a Bavli, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, Tutzach Velten, as we say, it's the world goes upside down, inside out. Is there such a thing as mechila? Now again, normally if the father's in the picture, he's alive and well, she, even though she submitted herself and she consented to this via, that's the case of Mefuta, that mechila is completely ineffective, it's invalid. And the reason for that is because it's Eina Bershusa. The money that we're talking about goes to her father. She's a Nara. And in the case of a Nara, all the money accrues to her father. Hence, her mechila is meaningless. But in the case of a Yesoma, where the father's out of the picture, now all the payments go to her. And if all the payments go to her, she's in the driver's seat, then in the case of Mefuta, there's a mechila. And her mechila is valid and it's recognized. Let's just read one more line, which is going to be our subject of Monday's shir, I guess, if we have Mirtz Hashem. Sunday, I think, will be Chag Shavuot. So, if you want to come over to the to Rabbi Meir number 3, we can learn. Alma, the Gemara says, "Kasavar ula kol hecha de ika mamona." Whenever there's a chiyuv mamon, is mamona mishalim? I'm sorry, kol hecha de ika mamonu malchus. Whenever there's a combination of mamonu malchus, mamona mishalim milkalo laki. You pay the money and you don't get malchus, and that's the premise of ula. And now the Gemara is going to embark upon a whole sugya, which I call again Ula, Ula, Ula. How does Ula know that when there's Malkus and Mammon, you pay Mammon and you don't get Malkus? Maybe it should go the other way around. Maybe you should get Malkus and not Mammon. Okay, Rabbi, say Chag Sameach to everyone. And thanks a lot for all the learning. And it's been very enjoyable. And hopefully we'll continue after we receive the Torah on Yom Rishon.
I don't know.